chapter 7. Verse 1, right? Yeah.
Verse 1.
Okay. You want to start?
Sri Parikshit said, "Dear Mother, as the sound of Krishna lamenting with his family members filled the universe, a series of terrible omens quickly ensued." In the 7th chapter, Brahma relieves Sri Krishna of his bewilderment, and Krishna delights Narad by describing the supreme position of the gopis. As the Yadus were running towards the palace, bad omens appeared in the sky, such as meteors and lightning without rain. Because four-headed Brahma could find no one else to explain the cause of these omens, he came to see for himself, accompanied by the Vedas, the Puranas, his personal attendants, and various demigods. Fair point. Brahma is indeed a learned person. In fact, his chosen advisors are the Vedas and Puranas, who stay in his court, always ready to offer their counsel. Translation. Brahma found his own father and spiritual master, the original Narayan, in an unprecedented state, distressed by love for his beloved devotees. Seeing the Lord thus boldly revealing his true greatness, normally hidden, Brahma was astonished. For a moment, he too lost his gravity and began to cry. Purport. Brahma is not just the main engineer of the universal creation, but also an intimate, loving servant of the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord himself is not just the ultimate origin of creation, but also the greatest loving servant of his devotees. Krishna's highest glories are not to be found in his pastime of creating the material world so that rebellious souls may indulge their perverted intentions. Earlier in Krishna's pastimes, Brahma had visited Brajamumi and discovered Krishna's true glories in the ecstatic relationships between Krishna and his pure devotees. Now in Dwarka, Brahma is being granted further realization. He is learning that Krishna's most wonderful qualities are his concern for his devotees and his submission to their control. Realizing this, Brahma can now more fully understand Krishna's identity as the original Supreme Lord Narayan. Brahma was not ignorant of these matters before, but seeing in such a helpless state his own progenitor, who had taught him the Vedas, shocked Brahma into a deeper realization. When Brahma saw Krishna in distress, he himself could not help but cry. Translation. With difficulty, Brahma brought himself under control and started thinking of how to restore his Lord to normal. Soon an idea came into his heart. 6. Crying at the Lord's side was Garuda, the son of Vinata. Garuda's attention was hard to get, but after calling to him loudly for some time, Brahma succeeded. Brahma then spoke. 7-8. Sri Brahma said, "There is another Sri Vrindavan here, between Vaivata Hill and the sea. And Nanda, Yashoda, and others are present within it in replica images, with similar herds of cows. That Vrindavan constructed by Vishwakarma appears just like the Vrindavan of Mathura. Come here to Dwarka." 9. "So carefully take Krishna and his brother in their present state and gently carry them there, but only Rohini should go with him, no one else." Purport. Brahma wants Garuda to carry Krishna and Balaram carefully to Nava Vrindavan. The two brothers should not find out that they are still in Dwarka Dhan, and their devotees should not be allowed to spoil the illusion by following them. Rohini can come along because she knows how to conduct herself intelligently, and especially because she used to live in Brajabhumi and will therefore see him in place. The replica Vrindavan was constructed by Vishwakarma, the architect of demigods, but to duplicate the Vrajvasis was beyond his skill. He couldn't make copies of unique devotees like Nanda Yashoda and other senior Catholic people, Sri Radhika and the other young gopis, or Sri Dham and Krishna and other gopa friends. But he was able to fashion static images of the Vrajvasis, lifelike enough to fool even Krishna. In the overall impression created, Nava Vrindavan was practically indistinguishable from the original, down to the small details of plant and animal life. It's interesting that there's That means, because Bork is an island, and this is on mainland between the sea and Raivata Hill. And Lalita Madhava, there's a New Vrindavan, but that New Vrindavan is sort of a garden of Krishna's palace. A Krishna's palace is
in Dwarka.
In Dwarka.
That's the whole story from, actually, Gokulinda Maharaj tells about the story when, I know it's from Lalita Madhava, when Krishna comes, and excuse me, when Radharani comes as Satyabhama to.
Satyabhama, yeah.
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 When she experiences. Hare Krishna, my mind's not working so well. What's the separation? Four types of separation? Prem-vaichitya. Prem-vaichitya. Yeah. In the presence of Krishna, she's feeling separation in Krishna's presence.
Yeah.
And Vuvur Vimaraj, you ever read that? The way he tells the story?
No.
That's really nice.
In which book?
Mathura means Vrindavan. But anyway, so you're saying that
just saying it's a different
Of Vrindavan.
Wow. It's a different narration. I don't know if it's a different Vrindavan, but that one, it's constantly coming and going, and it's just, you know, they just walk there, there's no mention of it being on the other side of the sea.
Uh-huh.
Here, that's what.
Here is clearly, is. Yeah. They're from Garuda's garden.
Arrive at the hill and the sea. And then when they wake up, they see Dwarka on the other side of the water. Okay.
Sri Parikshit said, thus Brahma, with some effort, brought Garuda back to his senses, and that most expert servant Garuda very slowly placed the two lords on his back. Garuda was dexterous enough to move Krishna and Balaram without waking them, and clever enough to understand that the scheme would break the trance of Krishna's bewilderment. Advised by Brahma, everyone else went back home. Meanwhile, as Krishna and Balaram were being carried by Garuda, Balaram more or less regained consciousness. Upon arriving at Nava Vrindavan, Garuda and Balaram gently placed Krishna on a bed. The gopas and gopis of Nava Vrindavan stood around him as if they were Krishna's real cowherd men and women. Uddhava came there with Devaki, who dearly loved her son, and also with Rukmini, Satyabhama, other queens, and Padmavati. They simply couldn't leave Krishna in such a state. So at Brahma's request, they hid themselves and took up positions some distance away from where they could still see Krishna. Some of the devotees hid themselves within the trees, and others resorted to various other kinds of camouflage. Narada, however, thinking he had committed an offense, did not accompany the demigods and the Yadavas. Instead, with great curiosity, he hid himself in the midst of the sky, fixing himself in a yoga sitting posture to observe the sweetness of the Lord's acts. It was Narada who had made Krishna so unsettled by mentioning the present state of the Vrajavasis. Narada therefore thought himself an offender. In fact, however, he had not acted offensively, as Parikshit Maharaj here indicates with the word eva, as if. Later in this chapter, we shall hear Krishna explain why Narada should not blame himself. Garuda positioned himself even higher in the sky, invisibly following his master to provide shade with his wings. After a few minutes, Krishna's brother came back almost to normal consciousness. That best of discerning thinkers understood the entire situation. Purport. Until Krishna recovered from his confusion, Balaram could not feel completely normal. This is expressed here by the word Iva. But still he recognized Brahma's plan and acted accordingly. Balaram quickly cleaned his own lotus face and that of his younger brother. Then he gently placed a flute in the waist of Krishna's dhoti, a buffalo horn and stick in Krishna's hands, a garland of kadamba flowers around his neck, a peacock feather ornament on his head, and newly fashioned rings of gunja berries on his ears. Thus, having arranged the forest outfit for Krishna with items made by Vishvakarma, Balaram with some effort lifted Krishna and then spoke to him loudly. Report: while dressing Krishna for the forest, Balaram also dressed himself. The special items required were native to Vraj and unavailable in Dwarka, but Vishvakarma, who had at his disposal all the creative skills of the demigods, had made convincing substitutes for real kadamba flowers, gunja berries, and so on. Does that mean that Vishvakarma anticipated this whole thing and ahead of time? Well, why were they all so accessible?
I don't know about here. In Lalita Madhava, it's like a replica. They grow there. Why wouldn't, although I don't know why in Dwarka there wouldn't be kadamba
flowers?
Trees. Yeah. They're not so native to Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm. Want to go ahead?
Well, Sri 22. Sri Baladev said, Sri Krishna, Krishna, my dear brother, get up, get up. Wake up from your sleep. Just see, it's now getting late. The cows are already entering the forest. 23. Sri Dam and your other friends are here waiting for you, and your parents are so filled with love that they cannot even speak to you. Purport. Krishna's friends are responsible for the cows, so when the impatient cows started to go ahead, the boys should have followed them, but Balaram indicated that the boys were too attached to Krishna to leave without him. Krishna's mother and father should have called Krishna to get out of bed and go after the cows, but Nanda and Yashoda, according to Balaram, were also distracted by ecstasy. In fact, however, Nanda, Yashoda, the cowherd boys, and the other Nava Vrindavan Vasis were unconscious dolls, immobile and unable to say or do anything to respond to any attempt Krishna might make to communicate with them. 24. These gopis are watching your lotus face and laughing at you as they whisper something in one another's ears. Purport. The gopis might be commenting to one another about why Krishna is still so tired this late in the morning. They know that Krishna must have been awake through most of the night, enjoying with his beloved, and they might be noticing signs of this on Krishna's lotus face. 25. Sri Parikshit said, in this way, Balaram filled the scene with talk. He called Krishna by his various names, caressed him, and dragged him around in his arms until Krishna finally got up and came back to some sort of consciousness. Krishna uttered the words, Shiva, Shiva, and suddenly stood up, a look of surprise on his face. It was not easy to awaken Krishna. Balaram tried kissing and embracing him, calling him by his names like Krishna, Gopal, and Govinda, and coaxing him tenderly. When all else failed, Balaram resorted to physical force, dragging Krishna out of bed. Krishna finally woke up, but he was still a little bewildered, as implied by the word Iva, which indicates that he seemed to come back to normal consciousness. 27. Krishna opened his lotus eyes, smiled, and quickly looked around. Seeing Nanda in front of him, he felt embarrassed and bowed down to him. Purport. Krishna first laughed at himself for having slept so long, but when he saw his father waiting for him, he felt ashamed. He bowed down because he had been taught to always offer respect to his father immediately after waking. 28. Krishna saw Mother Yashoda also standing nearby, her eyes open wide and unblinking as if pasted onto her face. Eyes open wide and unblinking as if pasted onto her face. Laughing in joy, he lovingly spoke, purport. As far as Krishna was concerned, Yashoda stood with unblinking eyes because she was stunned by natural motherly love. Vishwakarma's illusion seemed to be working effectively, at least while Krishna was still a little bewildered. Krishna 29. The Supreme Lord said, "Dear Mother, this morning during my sleep I saw many amazing things in just a short moment as if I were awake." Purport. Years ago, before coming to Mathura, Krishna had considered Braj his only real home. Reverting now to that earlier mood, Krishna assumes that his experiences in Mathura and Dwarka were just a dream. 30. I saw that I had gone from here to Madhupuri. There I saw wicked men like Kamsa slain, kings like Jarasandha vanquished, and the demigods satisfied. Purport. Various deeds Krishna performed in Mathura, like his killing of the demon Naraka, were meant specifically to please the demigods. Okay.
A great city called Dwarka was built on the shore of the ocean, and so many other things happened. But now there isn't time enough to tell you about them all. It's because this long dream distracted me that I didn't get out of bed on time like every other day. Report. But Mother Yashoda said nothing in response but kept staring at Krishna with unblinking eyes. He suspected she was worried he might be sick and had therefore overslept. To free Yashoda of this anxiety, Krishna here tells her that it was because of his long dream that he failed to wake up in time. The dream was so exceptionally convincing that it fooled him into thinking he was already awake. Dear respected brother, if you don't think this wonderful matter impossible, I'll explain to you in detail when we go to the forest. Baladev might think that one could not see such a complex dream in just a few minutes, just before waking. Krishna therefore assures him that this was a dream he really had. Later in the morning, Krishna says, when they have some time to sit together, he will gladly describe it all. Sri Parikshit said, after speaking in this way, Krishna offered his mother proper respects. Then the very expert Rohini sensed that Krishna wanted some food to take with him to the forest. While in the forest, one generally eats such simple things as rice mixed with yogurt. By observing the way Krishna moved his lotus hands and by other signs of his body language, Rohini, smart and practical, discerned that Krishna was thinking about such forest food. She quickly reasoned that since the artificial Mother Yashoda could not provide Krishna's meal or even say anything, Krishna might become suspicious if he were to ask food from Yashoda and she failed to respond. To avoid this potential disaster, Rohini moved into action before Krishna could say anything about being hungry.
Move into action.
You don't think it's the right use of words? You're seeing Keshav Bharati Maharaj in this?
Huh?
Is that it?
Oh, I don't.
Oh.
No. No.
I forgot.
Sri Rohini.
Sri Rohini said, "Dear child, your mother has no other son but you. She was so worried today by your extra sleeping that now she feels a bit ill. So I think we have talked enough." The cows and the boys tending them have already gone ahead. You should quickly follow them. I will prepare some nice refreshments for you and send them to you in the forest. She was quick in action. Sri Parikshit said, Krishna offered his respects to Rohini, who had spoken to him with such love, and then with a smile on his face like a thief, he stealthily took from a, I love this part, He stealthily took from Mother Yasoda's hand the butter she was holding. He then left to join his elder brother, calling out his name. Generous Krishna did not eat this butter before reaching the cows.
Okay, but she's a deity, and she's got deity butter. Krishna took the butter out of her hand. Let's see if there's anything.
It seems from Krishna's cooperative response that he trusted Rohini's word as much as Mother Yasoda's. He told Rohini, "I bow down to your feet," and offered her obeisances. Vishwakarma knew that Krishna loves fresh butter and that Mother Yasoda therefore often has some in her hand ready to give to him. Vishwakarma had fashioned his image of Yasoda accordingly. While Krishna was occupied with Rohini and Yasoda, Balaram, thinking that Krishna was back to normal, had already gone ahead. He also had a confidential reason for leaving Krishna behind, namely to leave Krishna free to meet alone with the gopis. In expertly pleasing words, Krishna had asked his two mothers to make lunch for him. Then he had set off, and on the way, he had met some of the gopis and enjoyed some joking talks. The report, Krishna's plaintive way of begging to be fed was devised to give his mothers the greatest pleasure. All of Krishna's dealings in Vraj were meant to give pleasure to his devotees.
I'm suspicious that this is not a final. Then he had set off.
Really?
Then he set off. Why he had? Then he had set off.
I hope it's well. I don't know. That's the only way to know is to get your volume two. Wait a minute.
What's the verse number?
This is 1739. Then he had set off. Maybe it's just a mistake.
Part of the final version in the database.
I mean, there's lots of typos. There were earlier also. There were in what you were reading and I was reading, but maybe that's just.
Is it in the verse or is it in the report?
In
the verse it says, "Then he has set off. And on the way he met some of the gopis and enjoyed some joking talks."
Okay.
And that's directly from the database.
Okay. Then he had set off. As he continued walking, playing his flute to keep the cows from wandering off, he then came upon Sri Radhika with her girlfriends and spoke to her with witty comments and charming smiles. The first group of gopis Krishna met, purport, was headed by Chandravali. After talking a while with them, Krishna went on further and met Sri Radha and her girlfriends. This means that earlier when the gopis had left their houses, they had dispersed themselves in various groups on the road to see Krishna go to the forest. The ladies of Mathura speak of the young gopis who go out to see Lord Krishna. Prata Vrajata Vishatas Jasayam Gobi Samam Kvanatayo Sanisham Yavenum Nirgat Titurunam Abalapati Buri Punya Pashanti Sasmitamukam Sadaya Valokam. Hearing Krishna playing his flute as he leaves Braj in the morning with his cows or returns with them at sunset, those young girls quickly come out of their houses to see him. They must have performed many pious activities to be able to see him as he walks on the road, his smiling face mercifully glancing upon them. 71, 41. Sri Nandanandan said, "O mistress of my soul, why don't you speak to me? Your devotee, whom you've now met in a secret place, what are you so busy with, my proud lady?" 42. How did I offend, O Omniscient One? You must know everything that happened today in my dream. Purport. There was no other evident reason for Sri Mati Radharani being angry with him, so Krishna concluded she must have been upset because of his dream that morning. She must have had the mystic power of knowing everything, past, present, and future, including what he had dreamed, what he had revealed to his mother about his dream, and what he was going to say to Shivana about it. Krishna began presenting these thoughts to Srimati Radharani, hoping to divert her from her anger. He was not put off by her standing silent like a statue, because in the past, his girlfriends and brothers had acted like this many times, when the excessive ecstasy of love for him had left them stunned. They often reacted this way to his joking words, when shocked by the strength of his wit. And in his present unusual mood, he could easily imagine that Sri Radha was refusing to speak to him because she was angry. Delay 43. I left you and went elsewhere. In that distant place, I married many princesses who had been preparing to end their lives, and I fathered sons, grandsons, and great-grandsons. Purport. Krishna rescued the 16,000 princesses kidnapped by Bulbasura, but they could not simply thank Krishna and return to their families, since they had already stayed in a man's house. No respectable princes would ever marry them. Only Krishna could save them from a shame they could otherwise end only by suicide, and only he could marry them all. You know, I read something very interesting today on BBC, which is not related to this, but it just reminded me that, you know, in many countries they're banishing child marriage.
Yeah, I read that.
You said that? That in every state in America you can marry a girl literally of any age.
Yeah.
You saw that one?
I only saw the headline in the video.
Oh. And they give two examples. One where a girl, parents got her married when she was 15. Another one, they got her married at 11.
In America?
In America. And it's legal in every single state.
What's the legal age?
No legal age.
There's no legal age.
No legal age.
You can get married at 6.
You can get married at any age.
It's interesting.
Interesting, no?
It's very interesting.
I was really surprised. Yeah. In America, it was banned in, you know, African countries and Asian countries, and in America, they're on everyone's case. And there it's legal.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I saw the articles.
That's what that article is about. Gives two women.
Who's 15?
One's 15 and one's 11. When they got married, showed her certificate, her wedding certificate. Husband was 20, she was 11.
Were they members of a cult?
No.
Anyways.
Well, one was, one girl, I don't remember where, Midwest, northern state, and she was 15 years old. You know, she wanted to start dating boys, so her mother got her married, which sounds pretty Vedic. And the other one was from Florida, and I think she was 11, she got pregnant or something, and so her mother, and then they married her off. But every state in it, it's legal. 44. Anyway, right now, I have to go to the forest. Tonight at dusk will restore satisfaction you will enjoy with me. 45. Sri Parikshit continued, having said this, Krishna threw a handful of flowers at Sri Radha, looked all around, and then embraced and kissed her. He then went ahead to meet the cows and cowherd boys. 46. As Devaki saw for the first time how wonderfully and all attractively Krishna was dressed for Braj, and how he was playing his flute, the milk started flowing from her breasts in great love, even though she was no longer young. Purport. Krishna has special ecstatic feelings for his devotees, as described in the previous several verses. This is the ultimate greatness of God. Reciprocally, Krishna's devotees have incomparable affection for him, which they each show in their own individual ways.
What does it mean she was no longer young? What does it mean she was no longer young?
Well, here he's saying he's already got great-grandsons. So that means she's no longer young.
But
in other words, she's beyond the age of having children or when she would have milk in her breast.
But in Goloka, there's no aging.
In Goloka, no. This is Goloka.
I know this is Goloka. Does that mean that in Gokul, the Lord's eternal associates age beyond the age which is manifest in Goloka?
I don't know. I never read. He doesn't.
I was curious.
Of course, how old? I mean, in any case, she's.
Says, though she was no longer young.
Yeah. Rukmini, Jambavati, and other queens, bewildered by an intensity of love they had never felt before, lost their composure, fainted, and fell to the ground. Purport. Krishna's queens were all noble ladies, careful to behave seriously in public, but the exceptional attraction they at this moment felt for Krishna defeated their gravity. They were accustomed to seeing Krishna dressed as a prince, not a coward. Now they could no longer control their emotions, and finally could not even retain their outward consciousness. 48. Even old Padmavati became intoxicated. Driven by lust, she, as well as Satyabhama, acted out, embracing and kissing Krishna again and again, and right after him, arms extended to try to catch her. 49. Kalindi, the daughter of the sun god, had seen Krishna like this before. Being very intelligent, she somehow calmed herself down. She and Uddhava grabbed Satyabhama and Padmavati and dragged them back. Purport. Queen Kalindi and Dwarka and the river Jamuna and Vrindavan are one and the same person. Thus, she alone among the Dwarka's queens had known Krishna during his cowherding days. This is at least the external reason why Kalindi in this situation was able to stay sober. But the fact is that she also had to struggle to remain calm just to help Brahma carry out his plan for dispelling Krishna's bewilderment. Kalindi caught hold of Satyabhama and Uddhava caught Padmavati.
Meanwhile, Lord Govinda went ahead tending his cows. When he saw the ocean before him, he thought it was the Yamuna, and with delight he called his friends to come play in the river. Purport. The scene now focuses again on Krishna. The Arabian Sea rings Dwarka like a fortress moat, and its dark blue color made Krishna think it was the river Yamuna. My dear friends, where have you gone? O Shridam, Subal, Arjuna, happily come here quickly. We can let our cows drink water from this river Yamuna, and we can play as much as we want, swimming in her gently flowing, clear, cool water. Thus, Lord Achyuta went on further with the cows and neared the sea, where mighty roaring waves came one after another.
Interesting, he went on with the cows, because it was, you know, but the cows are deities.
The cows are, yeah, they're also. I know.
It's like, you know, with the butter, he took the butter out of her hand, and when they went moved on with the cows. So maybe there's just more cows along the way.
Did he just bypassing this?
Yeah.
And he's thinking of the same cows.
Yeah. Or,
I mean, this Vishwakarma is really together. And this is when you really get a sense of that when you read this, you know, it's like this, every detail is.
Now, see?
Yeah, this one, this is the verse. This is the verse that I really like. When Krishna looked around the seacoast, he noticed his own great city visible in the distance. Krishna was surprised and exclaimed, "What is this? Where am I? Who am I?" To report. Coming out of the forest, beholding more clearly the vast water before him, Krishna saw the crashing waves and to the side in the distance a huge city. Addressing no one in particular, Krishna reacted spontaneously with these questions. What is the ocean in front of me? Is there such an ocean in Vrajabhumi? Or am I somewhere else? But how can the son of Nanda Maharaj be somewhere else? Or am I someone else? If I'm supposed to be a great prince, then why am I so unsuitably dressed? Astonished, he spoke these words again and again as he gazed at the vast ocean and the city. Then Lord Balaram told him something. Krishna was hesitant to decide whether what he was seeing was real or not. His elder brother had to settle the question for him. Sri Baladev said, "My master, Lord of Vaikuntha, please consider who you are. You were asked by the demigods to descend to remove the burden of the earth. Now please destroy the wicked and protect everyone else. Your cousin, Dhammaraj, King Yudhisthira, has undertaken a sacrifice. Please see to getting it performed." Purport. Balaram here requests Krishna to think of himself as the Lord of Vaikuntha and of Balaram as his aide, Anantashesha. Even though Krishna is indeed the son of Nanda Maharaj, he should now carry out the mission for which he and Balaram have descended from Vaikuntha. Of course, they had actually descended from Goloka Vrindavan, but Goloka and Vaikuntha are in many respects non-different. When Krishna descends to this world, he brings within himself all of his personal expansions, including the Lord of Vaikuntha. Thus, when he comes from Goloka, he is simultaneously coming from Vaikuntha. Krishna's main purpose for descending is to distribute the special kind of pure love found only at his own lotus feet by playing his pastimes in Sri Vrindavan Dham. Dwarka is not the suitable place for this purpose. But if Krishna turns his mind to this main objective, Balaram thinks he's likely to become completely unsettled again. Therefore, Balaram calls Krishna Vaikuntheshwar instead of Golokeshwar and tactfully points out that Krishna's current task is to relieve the earth of its burden by destroying evildoers and protecting law-abiding citizens. Most immediately, Yudhisthira needs Krishna's support for the Rajasuya Yagya. After achieving these secondary aims, Balaram implies, Krishna will be free to absorb himself in his first aim without impediments. 58. You have established Yudhisthira as emperor, but he is intimidated by Shalva's younger brother and by other exceedingly powerful villains. Purport, Yudhisthira will not dare face the challenge of staging the Rajasuya sacrifice unless Krishna encourages him, and several opponents like King Anushalva first need to be removed.
Anushalva.
Please therefore go to Yudhisthira. Was, is that from, coming from outside? Is that kirtan coming from outside?
Well, it's not in here.
I know, but this is my sweet Lord. Sorry.
Okay. But
it's not coming from
going outside.
I don't know. Maybe it's coming from upstairs. Please, therefore, go to Yudhishthira and with the help of the others try to kill his enemies who are persecuting your devotees out of hatred for you. These words are aimed at inducing Krishna to put aside the exalted sweet taste of intimate love and assume instead the contrary mood of militant anger. To stir up Krishna's fury, Balaram suggests here that without the help of the Yadavs, Krishna might be unfit to kill these enemies. These enemies are Krishna's, since Yudhishthira does not consider anyone an enemy.
16. Sri Krishna said, Balaram spoke these words to change his younger brother's ecstatic mood and bring him back to normal. Indeed, upon hearing that Balaram said, Krishna did change his mood. Purport. Before hearing these words, Krishna was swimming in prema rasa of the most confidential loving dealings, but now he was in a heroic mood. Thus, in the next verse, Parikshit will refer to him as Bhagavan. The personality of Godhead grew angry and said, Brother, who are those useless creatures? Shalva's younger brother, those like him. I will go by myself and kill them at once. 62. Trust these words of mine as true. They give my firm promise. In this way, the circumstances of the moment made Lord Krishna forget his confusion. Krishna's bewilderment was in fact his complete rapture in the highest prema rasa, but for now he had to refrain from those ecstasies. Looking around again, Krishna remembered that he was the master of Sri Dwarka, the divine king of the Yadavas. He remembered he had been sleeping inside the palace. Then he saw the flute in his hand, and himself and his older brother dressed like forest logs. 65. Krishna perceived he had gone out of the city to tend cows, and this filled him with surprise and doubt. He laughed as he pondered it. Purport. Now, aware of himself as the prince of Dwarka, Krishna had to reckon with the obvious facts that he and Balaram were dressed like cowherd boys and had been tending cows along the shore of the ocean. He wondered why they were acting like this and whether these things were actually happening or were they some sort of illusion. He laughed at his own inability to figure this out and at his long lapse from normal consciousness. 66. His brother Balaram understood what Krishna was thinking. Smiling, Balaram explained that this was all Balaram's arrangement,
Brahma's
arrangement, and told Krishna reasons why it had been done. Purport. Having ascertained from Krishna's laughter that Krishna had finally calmed down, Balaram was able to explain to him how Brahma had planned this scheme to bring him back to normal, and how Garuda and the others had carried out the plan. Krishna then looked at his brother's face and smiled as if embarrassed. And since Krishna's body was covered with dust, Balaram wiped him clean and bathed him in the sea. Purport. As indicated by the word Eva, Krishna had no reason to be embarrassed. We're reading about this Eva quite a lot.
I know.
Rupa Goswami does this a lot throughout the
book. I was thinking the exact same thing. Why is Eva mentioned so often?
He does just like this, just a sort of mention of sort of an inclination or something like, but
seems
qualifying.
To be,
yeah.
Seems to be better.
All throughout the book. His behavior all along can be totally praiseworthy. In Krishna's own words, Uddhava Jagupsha Riya Akarmasu. Real modesty means disgusted with improper acts. That's a good definition. If one has indulged in illicit acts, one should feel shame and condemn one's own wrong behavior. But Krishna felt no shame. He simply looked at Balaram and smiled. Balaram took care to wipe the dust off Krishna, dust most likely picked up while Krishna was herding the cows in the manufactured Vrindavan, or else earlier while Krishna was rolling around inside the palace in his uncontrolled ecstasy. 68. At that moment, Garuda arrived because he understood the Lord moods perfectly well. Krishna mounted him and returned unseen to his palace. The all-knowing Gurudeva informed Devaki, Rukmini, and others what was happening. he brought all the queens back to the palace to Lord Krishna's side. Uddhava arranged for the gossip monger Padmavati to attend to some business elsewhere because she would be out of place in the confidential discussions about to begin. Seventy. Mother Devi conceded to her son with blessings. Well aware of what time it was, she quickly went to prepare his meal. Purport. Devaki is excusing herself from the company of Krishna's queens, left Krishna at liberty to discuss with them frankly the matter which is the essential message of this chapter, the supreme devotion of the young gopis of Braj. Krishna felt too much filial reverence for his mother to talk about this openly in her presence. She knew that it was time to cook for Krishna, and on a deeper level she also understood that now she ought to take her leave.
The beloved queens of the Lord stayed hidden behind objects such as columns, not approaching him. But Satyabhama had not come there with the others, so Krishna asked about her from Uddhava. The Lord's servant Uddhava replied, "When you took your glorious excursion to Vrindavan, which is embraced by Ravate Hill, your special mood might have bewildered the unintelligent, but your queens were able to perceive it. They therefore hid themselves, watching from a distance. Then the spiteful, weak-minded Padmavati addressed them." Uddhava is sometimes called Haridas. Sukadeva Goswami therefore says, "Sharid vana girir dronir vikshan kusumitam dhruman krishnam samsmarayam nime haridaso vajal krishnam." Seeing the rivers, forests, mountains, valleys, and flowering trees of Raj, Haridas Uddhava enjoyed inspiring the inhabitants of Vrindavan by reminding them of Lord Krishna. O Devaki, devoid of pious credits, O unfortunate Rukmini, wretched Satyabhama, Jambavati, and you other miserable women, look here. From now on you should give up your pride and undergo the greatest penance is to become servants of those Abhira nomad women.
Now it's interesting that I just read also in Brihad, not Brihad, but in Gopal Champu, that Jiva Goswami calls the Prajvasis Abhiras.
Abhira. Really?
Nomads. Yeah.
But Abhira is connotes like a
Abhira Shumba.
Yeah, Abhira, yeah, Abhira, from that verse in the Bhagavatam, second canon.
They're Abhiras. Not necessarily they're primitive, but they're nomads. That's what they do. They just wander around.
Yeah.
Just to take their, wherever there's pastures, that's where they live.
Huh.
Even in the, you know, even in just before Krishna's time, they went from Nandagram to Gokula, and Gokula to Vrindavan, then Vrindavan back to Nandagram.
Purport. The queens of Dwarka may have won Krishna's hand in marriage, but they should not think they have a stronger hold in his heart than the Vrajagopis. The Abhiras are a degraded class, degraded class of nomads. Not just nomads, but says here, degraded class. That was my understanding because of that verse from the Bhagavatam, that Abhiras are degraded.
But continue.
Yeah. Whereas the cowherds of Nanda are respectable twice born Vaishyas. But because Nanda's community is engaged in the same cowherding business as the outcast nomads, and also just out of spite, Padmavati calls Nanda's gopis Abhiras. Shukadeva Goswami mentions the Abhira tribe in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Kirata Hunandra Polinda Pukasha. Abhira Kanka Yavana?
No.
That's not right.
Kasha.
That's Kasha. Yeah. Kasha, yeah. Kasharya yenye chapapa yadapashra yasra yasra janchitas mai prabhu vishnu vena maha.
Abhira kanka yavana kasharya. Abhira shumba
yavana
kasharya. That's something fishy about this.
Something wrong.
This version here.
Kiratas, Hunas, Andras, Pulendas, Puk. I thought it was Pukasha.
It is. It's a typo. I could imagine this is in the final version. It doesn't
sound polished.
Not as polished as the final version.
Kiratas, Hunas, Andras, Polendas, Pulkasas, Abhiras, Kankas, Yavanas, members of the Kasa races, and even others addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, for He is the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him.
Of course, they have different versions of. He mentions that in the appendix of the. Sometimes some Bhagavatam quotes are different than the ones we have. Different versions.
Oh, he does mention that. Uddhava told Krishna, "The wise Devaki shelters you, who shelter the entire world." When she heard those wicked words, she said, "Foolish woman, what is unusual here? Sri Vasudeva and I, in our previous lives, underwent austerities to get the Lord as our son. And therefore the Lord, the bestower of all boons, accepted that role. But Nanda and Yasoda prayed to the Lord Brahma for pure devotion." Purport, Sri Krishna surely has special affection for his parents, Vasudeva and Devaki, as well as Nanda and Yasoda. But Nanda and Yasoda are more intimately connected with Krishna. Vasudeva and Devaki in their previous lives as Sutapa and Prishni strove to attain a parental relationship with God. When they finally achieved the Supreme Lord's audience, after strict austerities for many years, they submitted to Him their desire, and the Lord agreed to fulfill it, as the Lord later told Devaki. Tadavam parituṣṭoham amunā vapusanaghe tapasā śraṇayā nityam bhaktya ca hṛdi bhavitā pradura samvarda irād yuvayo kamaditsaya riyatam varititukte madrisho vam vṛtā śrutā. O sinless Mother Devaki, after 12,000 celestial years, in which you constantly thought of me within the core of your heart with great faith, devotion, and austerity, I was very much satisfied with you. Since I am the best of all bestowers of benediction, I appeared in the same form as Krishna to ask you to take from me the benediction you desired. You then expressed your desire to have a son exactly like me. Krishna is Varada Ishwara, the best of those who give benedictions. By granting a single boon, He was able to bless Prishni and Sutapa to become His parents, not only once, but three times. But to Nanda and Yasoda, whose love for Him was even more pure, Krishna bestowed a greater reward. In the rasa of parental love, they enjoy the topmost perfection of prema bhakti, found only within the realm of Sri Vrindavan now. Nanda, in the role of the Vasudrona, expressed the unconditional purity of his love when he prayed to Brahma, "Jatayor nao Mahadeve Bhuvi Vishveshvare Harao Bhakti Syat Paramaloko Yayanjo Durgatim Taret." Please permit us to be born on the planet Earth so that after our appearance, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller and Master of all planets, will also appear and spread devotional service, the ultimate goal of life. Thus those born in this material world may very easily be delivered from miserable materialistic life by accepting devotional service. Bhagavatam 10:849. Nanda was concerned for the upliftment of the unhappy conditioned souls. He wanted Krishna to exhibit his childhood pastimes so that the world would hear and recite them and regain the taste of love of God. By the blessings of that foremost devotee of the Lord, Nanda and Yasoda, along with their whole household, became greater than us. Purport. In Devaki's opinion, Brahma had the power to make Nanda and Yasoda the best parents of the Lord because Brahma himself was the best of all the Lord's devotees. In the words of Shukadeva Goswami, the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Sa Adi Devo Jagatam Puro Guru, Brahma is the first of gods, the supreme spiritual master of all the worlds. Devaki indicates by her comparison of blessings that the Supreme Lord so greatly empowers devotees engaged in his service that the benedictions they give can be even more effective than his own. So many devotees are referred to as the best of all devotees.
Which is different later, not later, but in the Bhagavatam commentary, I'll say that Brahma is not able to bless Nanda and Yashoda to become parents.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
He can't give something he doesn't have.
That he doesn't have. No. That commentary. And that was also indicating also that therefore that Nanda and Yasoda were eternal manifestations, not that
eternally that just Drona and Dara.
They were expansions
and they entered into the bodies of original Nanda and Yasoda.
Right.
Actually, I started reading that book. I can bring it to you. Swarup. It's interesting. I don't know who, some doctor or scholar gives a long introduction on the validity of Gaura Sampradaya. It's quite interesting. There it says how Brahma Sampradaya was known as Brahma Sampradaya up to Madhava. After Madhava, from Madhava to Ishwarpuri, was known as the Madhava Sampradaya. And after Ishwarpuri, it's known as the Nimananda Sampradaya.
I never heard that. Why Nimananda? Because of Lord Chaitanya?
Lord Chaitanya. Quotes different references. Very interesting scholarly. I started reading, and then I got another book today. I don't know, you got this book by Shitala or Narata, most likely?
You know, I got it because she wanted me to review it.
You already got it. Okay, I remember reading Narata Vilas and books like that. So you already got it?
I did read it. That was the thing that she asked me to review the book and write a review for it, but I was just so busy this summer. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get to it. I felt really bad. I wanted to review it. I did review Vishaka's book.
Okay, we need to get.
Why did you turn it on?
You need to go?
Yeah, I do. Why?